There's a moment in 1987 when everything clicks. A young man in Detroit sits in a bedroom with a drum machine the size of a shoebox and a synthesizer he bought secondhand for a few hundred dollars. Outside, the city is in freefall. Factories that once employed hundreds of thousands of people have closed. Entire blocks have been abandoned. But inside this room, he is making something that sounds like nothing that has ever existed before. It sounds like machines dreaming. It sounds like the future arriving, whether you're ready or not. His name is Derek May. The track he's about to release is called Strings of Life. And it will travel from a dying American city to the clubs of Europe, change popular culture on two continents, and give birth to a genre that in 2025 spans 639 cities across the globe. This is the story of techno. Not just the music, but the world that made it, the people who invented it, the machines they used, the cities that embraced it, and why, 40 years later, it still sounds like the future. Let's go back to the beginning. Not the music, but the place. Detroit, Michigan. In the 1950s and 1960s, it was one of the most powerful industrial cities on Earth. The auto industry employed nearly a third of the workforce. Motown Records, based on West Grand Boulevard, was producing some of the most beloved music in American history. Detroit was a city of production, of rhythm, of ingenuity. Then the 1970s arrived, and everything began to unravel. The oil crisis hit car sales hard. Automation started replacing workers on the factory floor. By the early 1980s, Detroit was experiencing one of the most severe economic collapses of any major American city in the 20th century. According to research from the University of Michigan's Bentley Historical Library, the deindustrialization of Detroit meant factory closures, shrinking auto industry employment, and very high unemployment across the city. Large parts of Detroit became physically hollowed out. White flight had already gutted the tax base. City services were shrinking. Buildings were being left to decay. It is in this landscape that techno was born. And that is not a coincidence. Because the three young men who invented techno grew up in the shadow of this collapse. They saw the factories closing. They grew up in black suburban communities navigating recession and abandonment. And they responded by making music that sounded like the machines that had betrayed their city, but now on their own terms, driven by human creativity, free from the factory floor. Three men were Juan Atkins, Derek May, and Kevin Saunderson. They met as students at Belleville High School, a suburb about 40 kilometers west of Detroit. They would become known as the Belleville Three. And together, they changed the course of electronic music. Juan Atkins was the first to start experimenting seriously. According to the Detroit Historical Society, he is widely described as the first of the trio to start DJing and making electronic music. He was listening to a wide range of influences, including the German band Kraftwerk, which had been producing hypnotic, machine-driven electronic music since the early 1970s. Kraftwerk's 1977 album Trans-Europe Express is often cited as a key influence. Its cold, mechanical rhythms and futuristic sound were unlike anything in American popular music at the time. But Atkins wasn't just listening to Kraftwerk. He was also listening to Parliament Funkadelic, the cosmic funk of George Clinton, which had deep roots in Detroit. And he was listening to a local radio DJ known as the Electrifying Mojo. The Electrifying Mojo was extraordinary. According to the Detroit Historical Society, he was a Detroit radio personality who helped expose listeners to electronically driven funk, Prince, Kraftwerk, and early Detroit electronic music. On his late-night show, he would mix genres that no one else was mixing: funk, electronic pop, new wave, early house music from Chicago. His playlists were a bridge. They showed young people in Detroit that the cold machinery of Kraftwerk and the warm groove of Parliament Funkadelic could exist in the same space. They could, in fact, be fused. Atkins heard that fusion and ran with it. In 1985, under the name Model 500, he released a track called No UFOs. It is widely cited as one of the first techno records. The rhythms were repetitive and mechanical. The sounds were synthetic. There were no guitars, no live drums, no singing in any traditional sense. It was built entirely from machines. It sounded like Detroit looked: industrial, resilient, oddly beautiful. Now, a brief word about the machines. Because you cannot understand techno without understanding the instruments that made it. And what is remarkable about those instruments is how cheap they were. The Roland TR-808 was a drum machine released in 1980. Roland marketed it as a tool for professional musicians who wanted to practice at home. It did not sound like real drums. The kicks were deep and boomy. The hi-hats were crisp and metallic. Professional musicians rejected it almost immediately. It was a commercial failure. Roland discontinued it after 2 years. Then it started turning up in secondhand music shops across America at knockdown prices. Detroit and Chicago producers bought them for a fraction of their original cost. And those weird, artificial sounds, the sounds that professional musicians had dismissed as fake, turned out to be exactly what was needed. The TR-909 came a few years later, also from Roland. It had a slightly crisper, harder sound than the 808. According to Roland's own documentation, the TR-909 was in the hands of Detroit and Chicago producers by the mid-1980s, and it became central to early techno. The TB-303 was a bass synthesizer, also from Roland, also a commercial failure, also available for next to nothing. When producers fed it unusual settings it was never designed for, it produced a strange, bubbling, almost alien sound. That sound became the signature of acid house and acid techno. The point is this: the music that would dominate nightclubs across Europe for the next 20 years was made on machines that had failed commercially. Machines that had been thrown away. Machines that were picked up for almost nothing by young black musicians in a failing city, who heard possibilities where everyone else had heard problems. There is something deeply fitting about that. Derek May's Strings of Life arrived in 1987. It is worth pausing on this track, because it was different from everything else around it. Most early techno was hard, relentless, driven by machines alone. Strings of Life introduced something unexpected, a piano. The melody is joyful and urgent at the same time. It rides over a driving electronic rhythm in a way that feels almost contradictory, almost too human for the genre that surrounded it. According to sources covering its history, Strings of Life was released under the name Rhythm is Rhythm, and it became one of the defining tracks of the Detroit scene. It also pointed towards something important. Techno was not purely about coldness or machinery. It carried emotion. The machines were not replacing the human. They were expressing something the human voice alone could not. Kevin Saunderson, the third of the Belleville Three, was perhaps the most commercially successful. In 1988, he released a track called Just Want Another Chance under the name Reese. And through his group Inner City, he brought the Detroit sound to mainstream audiences in a way that Juan Atkins and Derek May never fully sought to do. Inner City's track Good Life became a genuine pop hit across Europe. It had a singer, it had hooks, it was accessible. And it helped open a door that techno would walk through. Because by 1988, something extraordinary was happening on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. Chicago had already developed house music, its own form of electronic dance music, rooted in the gay black club scene of that city. House music had arrived in British clubs by the mid-1980s. And in 1988, something happened in Britain that music historians now call the Second Summer of Love. Ecstasy, the drug, had arrived in British club culture. And with it came a massive explosion of interest in electronic music, in all-night dancing, in an experience that was about collective joy rather than individual performance. Detroit techno records began reaching British DJs. They were played alongside Chicago House. And together, they defined a new kind of night out that would reshape British popular culture. But the most extraordinary thing happened not in Britain, but in Germany, specifically in Berlin. And specifically because of something that happened on the 9th of November 1989. The Berlin Wall came down. You have to understand what that meant, physically, for the city. Berlin had been divided since 1961. The wall ran through the middle of the city. When it fell, overnight, there were suddenly vast empty spaces in East Berlin. Abandoned warehouses, former government buildings, underground vaults and bunkers. An entire urban landscape that had been frozen for decades suddenly became available. And into that landscape, music moved. Tresor is one of the most famous examples. It opened in 1991 in the vaults beneath a former department store in central Berlin. According to the club's own history and documentation from the Goethe Institute, Tresor quickly became a key bridge between Berlin's emerging techno scene and Detroit's pioneers. Detroit artists were among the club's earliest guests. The Detroit sound, raw and relentless, was exactly what the energy of a reunified Berlin seemed to need. What happened in Berlin in the early 1990s was remarkable. An entire city was being rebuilt, emotionally and physically. There was a sense that the old rules no longer applied. People were moving into the East, into abandoned spaces, and filling them with music and creativity. Techno was the sound of that moment. It was music without words. Music that required no shared language. Music that a crowd of people from East and West Germany, from Britain and America and the Netherlands, could move to together without needing to understand the same lyrics or share the same cultural references. It was the sound of a world changing. The Love Parade was the other great symbol of Berlin techno culture. It started in 1989, the same year the wall fell, as a small street parade in West Berlin. It grew steadily through the early 1990s, and by 1999, according to reporting from Germany's Federal Agency for Civic Education, the Love Parade drew approximately 1.5 million people to the streets of Berlin. 1.5 million people, following a truck with speakers. Moving to techno music in the street, it sounds almost impossible now. But it happened. And it demonstrated something, that this music, which had been made in a bedroom in a Detroit suburb on secondhand machines for next to nothing, had become the soundtrack to one of the most significant cultural moments in post-war European history. Let's talk about what techno actually sounds like. Because if you've heard it but never really listened to it, it can be hard to understand why it does what it does to people. Techno is generally around 120 to 150 beats per minute. The rhythm is what musicians call four on the floor, a kick drum on every single beat of the bar, relentless and driving. There are usually hi-hats and snares adding texture above that foundation. And then there are synthesizers adding what's called the atmosphere. Long, dark, sweeping sounds, metallic stabs, acid lines bubbling underneath. What there usually isn't is a melody, in any conventional sense. There are no words, no chorus, no verse, nothing to hum afterwards. And this is the point. Techno was not designed to be listened to at home, sitting still. It was designed for a specific experience, a dark room, a large crowd, a powerful sound system, hours of continuous music. The effect of all that repetition, that driving rhythm, that shared physical experience, is something that is genuinely difficult to describe if you haven't felt it. But people who've described it as almost meditative, a letting go, a feeling of the individual self dissolving into a collective. This is why clubs like Trezor and the many that followed across Europe became so important. They were not just venues, they were spaces where a particular kind of experience was possible. And that experience created communities, subcultures, entire ways of life that persist to this day. By the mid-1990s, techno had fragmented into dozens of subgenres. There was acid techno, which leaned into that bubbling TB, 303 bassline sound. There was minimal techno, which stripped everything back to the bare essentials. A kick, a hi-hat, maybe a single repeating melodic phrase. There was ambient techno, which pulled away from the dance floor entirely and became more like atmospheric music for listening. There was hardcore techno, which pushed the tempos higher and higher until it became something almost brutally fast. And there was dub techno, which brought in influences from Jamaican reggae and sound system culture, creating long, echo-drenched tracks that felt oceanic. Each of these subgenres developed its own community, its own record labels, its own clubs and festivals. And each of them carried forward something from that original Detroit sound, the primacy of rhythm, the use of machines, and a commitment to the idea that music could be made by anyone with the right equipment and the right imagination. It is worth noting what techno was not, or rather, who it was not about in the way it came to be portrayed. Techno was invented by Black American musicians in Detroit. Juan Atkins, Derek May, and Kevin Saunderson were Black men. The Electrifying Mojo was a Black DJ. The communities that nurtured this music in Detroit were Black communities navigating poverty and deindustrialization. When the music crossed to Europe, it was taken up and developed largely by white European producers and club owners. The Detroit originators have spoken, over the years, about the complexity of that story. About the way their music was embraced globally while their city continued to struggle. About questions of credit and cultural exchange. This is not a simple story with villains and heroes. The Detroit artists did travel to Europe. They did play Trezor and the clubs that followed. Some of them built long careers through that transatlantic connection. But the history of who invented what and who got paid for it and who got to own the culture is a conversation that the techno world has been having with itself for decades. It is part of the story and it deserves to be named. By the 2000s, techno had become global in a way that no one from that Belleville bedroom could have predicted. The Detroit Movement Festival, later known as the Electronic Music Festival, began in 2000 as a celebration of the music's birthplace. Every year, the artists who made it and the artists they influenced returned to Detroit to play outdoors in Hart Plaza, on the banks of the Detroit River. Meanwhile, Berlin consolidated its position as the world's techno capital. Bergin, which opened in 2004 in a former power plant in East Berlin, became perhaps the most famous club on Earth. Its sound system, its architecture, its notoriously selective door policy all contributed to a mythology that drew visitors from every corner of the world. The internet changed things too. In the early 2000s, it became possible to hear techno from anywhere. Record labels began streaming, mixes circulated online. Young producers in places that had no techno clubs at all could download software, make tracks at home, and share them instantly. The geography of the scene expanded dramatically. And then came 2020. Clubs closed everywhere. The dance floor experience that techno had always been built around disappeared overnight. Producers and DJs turned to live streams. According to reporting from BeatPortal, DJs used live streams to reach audiences across continents rather than only local dance floors. The technology that had always been central to techno now became the only way the community could hold itself together. When clubs reopened, the audience had changed. New people had discovered the music through streams. The scene had grown. According to Rave Report's global club data, 2025 was the biggest year in the history of the global electronic music scene, spanning 639 cities. So here is where we have arrived. A music that was born in a city that was falling apart, made on machines that had been thrown away, by young black musicians who heard something in those machines that no one else had heard. Traveled across an ocean, helped soundtrack the end of the Cold War, filled the abandoned spaces of a reunified city, drew 1.5 million people into the streets, fragmented into dozens of forms, survived a global pandemic, and is now playing in 639 cities on Earth. That is an extraordinary arc. And what it tells us, I think, is something about the nature of creativity itself. The Roland TR-808 was a commercial failure. Detroit was an economic disaster. The Berlin Wall was a symbol of division. None of the conditions that produced techno were designed to produce anything. And yet, Derek May, in interviews over the years, has talked about the strange alchemy of their situation. They were young, they had limited resources, they were surrounded by collapse. And that scarcity, that limitation, became a kind of creative pressure. They weren't making music for a market. They weren't trying to please a label. They were making music because they heard something in their heads and they wanted to hear it outside their heads. The machines made it possible. Not the expensive machines, the cheap ones. The ones that had failed. The ones that were available precisely because no one else wanted them. There's one more thing worth saying before we close. The word techno was not coined by Derek May or Juan Atkins or Kevin Saunderson. It appeared earlier, in various contexts, in discussions of technology and the future. But it was a compilation, released in 1988, called Techno. The new dance sound of Detroit that attached the word to this specific music and sent it out into the world. The compilation gathered tracks from Detroit's underground scene and gave it a name that stuck. The name fit, because the music had always been about the relationship between humans and technology, not a fearful relationship, not a reverential one. A creative one, the idea that the machines human beings build can be turned back by human imagination into something that makes other human beings feel more alive. That is what techno has always been about. And somewhere right now, in one of those 639 cities, someone is in a dark room with a very loud sound system, feeling it.